I am talking with Miranda Marquette, who is running for the Idaho State Legislature, District 33, which represents Idaho Falls, Idaho. Miranda graduated with a master's degree in journalism, and she does a lot of freelance writing, mostly about finance. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, I haven't updated the I haven't updated my website yet, but I also have an MBA, freshly minted.
Oh, very good. So congratulations. That's awesome.
I have credentials.
Credentials are a good thing. That's awesome. Let's see. Her work has been featured in publications such as USA Today, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, among many others. Miranda, thank you so much for chatting with me today. Truly appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on. I'm excited. Podcast is one of my favorite forms of media.
Yeah, I love podcasting. Been a fan of podcasting for years. And finally, about 2.5 years ago, I decided to take the plunge and do it myself. And I've had a lot of fun. It's given me the opportunity to meet a lot of different types of people across the world. And it's been a blast. I've had a lot of fun doing it. So
yeah.
Thank you for being one of my guests. As you can tell, the name of my podcast is Everyone Has a Story, even though the top part is cut off back there on my lovely green screen. But so what I do want to find out is a little bit about your life. Where are you from? Are you an Idaho native? Did you grow up here in Idaho Falls?
Yeah, so, so technically I did elementary school in Pocatello.
Okay.
But
we'll let you, we'll forgive that.
Slide. But no, yeah. I did graduate from Skyline High School. I did grow up here in Idaho Falls my formative years. I did obviously go away to college and grad school and kicked around a little bit in between. But about 5 years ago, I moved back to Idaho Falls. I moved back to my hometown excited to hopefully make some sort of a difference. I mean, I feel like, I helped out with the College of Eastern Idaho campaign. I collected signatures for Medicaid expansion.
Okay.
And so, you know, I've been involved in those things and I've been involved in local politics. And so I like the idea of making a positive difference here in my hometown. So here
we go. Good deal. Let me ask you, if you don't mind, can I ask you what year you graduated from Skyline?
Oh, let's do this. 98.
Okay. Well, I was just wondering because Skyline is actually where I graduated from.
Oh.
A little bit before you, probably about 6 years before you were there.
Oh, nice.
So
okay. Yeah.
I'm older than dirt.
Class of older.
That's right. Yeah. Skyline was a great school. It was fun. Do you still live on the west side right now or?
So no, I just recently moved a couple months ago. So I did live on the west side. I actually lived right across from Eagle Rock, across Pancarry from Eagle Rock.
Oh, gotcha.
Over there when we moved back. Mm-hmm. That's where I moved in, was back over about a half a mile from my parents, half a mile from where I grew up. Mm-hmm. But I recently moved house. We got a different place. It's got like a downstairs apartment. My son is graduating from Compass Academy.
Oh, wow. Great.
Yeah. He's a senior. He'll be graduating. And so, but he wants to stay here and go to College of Eastern Idaho. We recently moved house and we joke that he's already moved out to the basement.
Yeah. There you go.
He's got his own kitchen. He's all set up.
There you go. That's awesome. I've got a son who I wish will move out completely, but that's another story altogether. So it's great that he's got the option these days of actually attending, a community-based college here in town.
Yes.
That's only been a few years that's been a possibility to actually be to, you know, official, an official college, you know.
As right. Yeah. So.
And you said you helped get that passed?
Yeah, I helped on the campaign. I mean, I wasn't like an architect of the campaign or anything. But, you know, I collected signatures. I made some phone calls. I was out there advocating for it. So, yeah, I mean, I wanted to really push for it because, you know, it's nice to have an educated workforce.
What?
Brings in better jobs.
Yes, no doubt. What colleges did you attend?
Yeah, so I did go down to Southern Utah University down in Cedar City.
Uh-huh.
Did that for my undergrad. I did, as you mentioned, my master's degree in journalism over at Syracuse University.
Oh, okay.
And then my MBA is actually from Utah State University.
Oh, great. So, and you said you just recently got that.
Just recently, just wrapped it up this summer. So,
Great.
Yeah.
You obviously believe in education quite a bit.
I do. Yes. I believe in lifelong learning. And I believe that you don't have to keep getting degrees to keep learning, of course. I mean, I love the idea of lifelong learning and it doesn't have to be a formal education, but just being out there, learning things, getting to know people, you know, new ideas, sure. yeah. things like that. Yeah. I'm always reading. I'm always trying something new. My biggest complaint about the Friends for Learning here in Idaho Falls is that it's only open to people 55 and older.
Because
I would really like to participate more in that.
Yeah, sure.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
So yeah. But yeah, yes, definitely a big proponent of education and lifelong learning, whatever form that takes in your life.
That's good. Well, tell me, why did you decide to move back to Idaho Falls?
Yeah, so partly it was the divorce.
Oh, okay.
let's go. Let's do that.
Those things happen.
So I mean, we were living in Pennsylvania. My ex-husband had a job outside of Philadelphia at Penn State Brandywine, and he asked for a divorce. And so my son and I moved back here. At the time, it just kind of made more sense just because of the way the parenting was falling out and the way the resources were falling out. It just made more sense for my son and I to move back here to Idaho. So that's what we did.
Okay, great. How did you get – I'm kind of bouncing around in some of these questions. I apologize for that. But how did you get into a situation where you're you do most of your freelance writing based around finance? How did that happen?
So originally I was a science writer. So I started out as a physics major. I started out in the physical sciences. I started out doing that stuff. But then I ended up taking a comms class as part of my required humanities and really enjoyed it, really liked it, which is weird because I am an introvert. But I did really like these kinds of aspects of comms that dealt with understanding people, really communicating with people and kind of the theories behind it. Anyway, I really enjoyed it. And switched my majors, blah, 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 did the thing, went to J school, got out of journalism school, but I still really liked science and I still followed science. And so I decided I was going to be a science writer when I got out of journalism school. And I did. I did some stuff for Discover Magazine, did some stuff for physics.com, physics.org, whatever. Anyway, physics.org. Anyway, did some stuff for the physics website. And it was really fun to do that stuff. But then I also needed to get more gigs to make money and work on the internet. And so I actually started writing it this is way back in the day. So you probably remember this because you're old. You're older than I am.
Yes.
So you probably remember the days of like the true content farms on the internet.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So I started writing for one of these self-directed content farms where you could pretty much just publish whatever you wanted and they'd pay you a flat fee, but then they'd also pay you a performance fee for your page views. Oh. So I started doing that just to like pay the rent, but while doing my science writing, and I used a pen name because I didn't want my name on that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And but one day somebody contacted me through the messaging system on this content farm and said, hey, we noticed that your stuff is consistent. You post consistently and you also write better than the other people on the site.
Oh, wow.
So they were like, we are looking for somebody who can, they're like, blogging is going to be the next big marketing thing. Mm-hmm. And they were right.
Yeah.
They're like, blogging is going to be the next big marketing thing. So we want to find people who can provide content for blogs. And they just so happened to be providing content for a company that did retirement planning, and also a Forex market maker. And So I was like, I don't know anything about money. This is insane. And she just said, well, you write about science a lot, and science and money, it's all just math. You can do this. That's what she said. This is how she sold it to me. Science and money, it's all just math. You can do this. And so I was like, okay. So I started learning about it. So I started, and so it just sort of shifted. And I did for about 5 years. I kept up with the science writing, and I started building the clientele in the personal finance space and in the financial topic space. But yeah, about 10 years ago, I ended up just shifting all the way into different financial topics because it was just getting too hard to try and do both.
Oh, gotcha.
Let's be honest, writing about money pays more. It just does.
Sure.
I mean, like, if we're, yeah. if we're being yeah. honest, if right. we're talking about things right. we're going to pay the bills.
Right. More money. People are probably worried about their 401k than they are about a black hole or something like that, right?
It's true. Yeah, although, funny. You know, I still have, when I was doing the science writing, I talked to a lot of people who are on the cutting edge of quantum computing and all that kind of stuff. And also a team in South Korea who had like one of those invisibility cloak things.
Oh, you know, they were
super into bending the light. Anyway, it was really interesting because I got to talk to people on the cutting edge of that. And so I still occasionally have people that I can reach out to and just be like, where are we at, man?
Well, that's awesome.
Let's talk about entanglement.
There you go. That's awesome. I mean, I'm very light, you know, like very superficial when it comes to science, as far as like I find those pop articles to read on the internet, that kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, half of that stuff is so intriguing to me. String theory. I just read an article the other day that said that they're really seriously considering that Einstein's theory of relativity is false,
right?
And they're going a totally different direction.
Yeah, they're like, wait a second.
Yeah.
Or you know, you think of this, and that's a beautiful thing. The thing that I love about science, and everything is it's more of a quest for knowledge.
Right. Right.
I know we like to pretend like science is like all the answers, but it's really a quest. It's an ongoing quest, and it's an ongoing quest to like learn more, understand the world around us better. And that's the thing that's been kind of frustrating about this whole COVID situation is the reality is this is new. That's why it's called novel.
Right.
But it's like this new situation where we haven't dealt with the specific virus in humans before. Mm-hmm. We haven't dealt with this stuff, and we're still learning about it, and we're still understanding how it works. We're still understanding how it mutates. I was talking to my uncle, does a lab down in Pocatello at Portneuf down there in the hospital. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about how fast this thing has mutated, how different strains were coming across the country, how different strains interact with different people in different ways. It was fascinating to listen to him talk about this and talk about how, you know, the reason why these tried and true things like washing your hands, wearing a mask can help slow it down is because that's, I mean, that's like it, because it's about reducing transmission at this point, you know, because we don't know. But yeah, but they keep having to change guidance and we keep having to refine that a little bit because we're still learning.
Right.
And I think one of the things that we have a hard time with as humans is being comfortable with not knowing.
Mm. Yeah.
And being comfortable with forging ahead and learning as we go. Like we have a hard time being comfortable with that. We want the answers. We want somebody to hand us an answer and we want the answer to say the same all the time.
Yeah.
And that's not how it is. And
I
was following the same thing with Einstein's theory of relativity, because it's like this thing has been gospel for like almost 100 years.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So what happens if it's not entirely the whole story.
Right,
what if there's more?
Yeah.
And so that's one of the things that I love about science is it's a quest. I'm also a D&D nerd, so I like the quests.
Right. Sure.
So to me, science is a quest.
That's good. Well, we're going to switch into talking just a little bit about the campaign, if you don't mind. I guess it's kind of a hard 90 degree or maybe 180 degree turn. You ready for it? They're not, again, I am a terrible journalist. I am an interviewer and not even good at that. So don't worry. It's not going to be tough. I don't think, at least. So So here's let's see how good my questions are here. They're terrible. I know they are. But anyway, what is the biggest reason why you decided to enter the race?
Yeah. So honestly, deep down in my heart, I am more of an activist. One of the things I loved about being chair of the Bonneville County Democratic Central Committee is that I had more of an activist role, right? Mm-hmm. Where I could go out and really kind of push more. And I am at heart really an activist. I really like moving forward. Like I really enjoyed advocating for Prop 2, that's Medicaid expansion. I really enjoyed advocating for College of Eastern Idaho. I really enjoy writing the op-eds in the newspaper about things. I like being an activist. I like being on the ground. I like doing that kind of work.
So
one of the things you do as a county chair, though, is you try and recruit people to run for office.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard. And it's hard in Idaho. And it's hard as a Democrat.
Yeah, sure.
It's just really hard. Yeah. But there are times when you look and you say, because to me, it's not about party. Personally, if I had my druthers, we would get rid of the duopoly. Not a big fan. Mm-hmm. You know, I agree with George Washington that it's a bad idea to get excessively partisan, and that division into parties leads to problems. It leads to chaos. It leads to strife. It leads to increasing division. And so I would love to see the end of the duopoly. If you're going to talk major parties, sorry, I'm going off on a tangent here.
No, you're fine. Go ahead.
But I was a political science minor. So.
It's your story. Go ahead and talk.
So I, you know, if you look at the United States, we should have between four and six major political parties. Yeah. The fact that we only have two is utterly ridiculous, in my opinion. Yeah. But here in Idaho, two parties would be an upgrade. And so
yes. Where we're at. Yes, it would. Yeah.
So one picks this side. I think if I were in a state that has supermajority on the other swing, I would probably actually be agitating for the underdog. Because like I said, I'm an activist at heart. And so anyway, I would like to see ranked choice voting, but that's not happening right now. And so here I am. And anyway, but what it comes down to for me are people and policies. And looking at people and policies, how are the people in charge making policies that impact our lives? Where are they going with this? Is it doing harm to people? Is it causing distress in our communities?
Okay.
And one – oh, sorry. Were you going
to say? No, go ahead. Go ahead. Continue. Okay.
So one thing that really disappointed me when I was looking back at, both Brian Zollinger and Barbara Ehart are representatives here in District 33, looking at both of their records, it was disappointing and distressing to me that a lot of the things that they advocated for, pressed for, and pushed for in terms of policy and law were actively harmful to our community. So things like voting against higher education funding, that's harmful to our community. Making laws and pushing laws that hurt already marginalized communities, and spending the time and energy and money on these types of things while ignoring larger issues that impact more Idahoans, right? They spent a huge amount of time on Representative Ehart's HB 500, which was the sports bill. They spent a huge amount of time on that in the legislature. Guess how many trans athletes we have in Idaho?
One, two, how many? Zero. Oh, I see. I didn't even know that. That's sad.
And so it's not an issue here. Right. And there are already policies in place to deal with this, assuming that it ever becomes an issue here. And so the time and resources spent to single out an already marginalized community when we have education funding issues, when we have property tax issues for our seniors, when we have infrastructure issues, when we have people trying to limit our access to our public lands, that seemed problematic to me. Why are our so-called representatives spending so much time to kick marginalized people while they're already down?
Right.
When we have actual challenges that need to be addressed. That was very frustrating to me. Other things that have been frustrating to me, for instance, they introduced vaping is a huge thing in our community. So here in Idaho Falls, we have this this initiative called CUSP, and it was put in place by the mayor. It's supposed to help us, like, it's got different subcommittees. We're supposed to be looking at ways we can make our community healthier and safer and more inclusive. And I am on the health subcommittee. And on this health subcommittee, one of the things we're finding is vaping is a huge issue here. And vaping is another one of those things where we're not entirely sure what the long-term effects are, but we know from what we've seen so far in the data and the health results that it can have terrible impacts on your lungs. It can be worse in some cases, depending. It can even be worse than like cigarettes. So last legislative session, there was a bill brought forward to regulate vape similarly to the way we regulate tobacco, to make it limited to minors so that minors couldn't go to vape shops and get vaping supplies. Barbara Ehart, Representative Ehart, voted against that bill. I mean, it passed anyway.
Right.
But she voted against that bill. And when I'm starting to look at these things and everything, it becomes clear. And then also, I mean, you know, her and Representative Zollinger fought against Medicaid expansion every step of the way.
Right.
District 33 had the second highest rate of approval of Prop 2 in the state. 65% of Bonneville, we can't even get a school bond to get that high of approval, you guys. Yes. 65% of District 33 voted in favor of Prop 2. And still fighting against it every step of the way. And so in the end, I mean, it sounds terrible because it's like you want to be able to say, I'm running for office because I have a vision for blah, blah, blah. Like you want to be able to say that. You don't want to, you don't want to have to say, I'm running for office because this person is not representing our actual values.
Sure.
This person is not representing us appropriately. This person is siding with vape shop owners in northern Idaho. This person is introducing legislation crafted by an extremist group in Arizona. I'm not even kidding about that. That's this extremist group in Arizona is the one that crafted the bill. You can go look that up. Sure. But she's pushing, they're spending time, energy, and resources on bills pushed by extremist groups in Arizona rather than focusing on things right here affecting our seniors on fixed income, right here affecting our minors with the vaping, right here affecting mental health. In fact, she railed against the governor's task force that was supposed to be used to support youth mental health, and all of a sudden she's now crying about mental health because of COVID-19.
Right, right.
Because she doesn't want, you know, because she wants to bully School District 91.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I'm sorry. Like, a lot of people are like, well, why are you just attacking her record? And I'm like, because her record needs to be attacked.
Well, and
I'm running. If she weren't going against all this stuff, I wouldn't feel the need to run. I mean, I tried to recruit people to run against her. Nobody wanted to do it. Nobody wanted to deal with it. And I understand why. I mean, yeah. I've gotten my... Oh, well, I'm a woman on the internet. I've been getting death threats for 15 years.
Sure.
But I've never had them from somebody here in the place where I live.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and so on that topic, the Post Register just, you know, released their thing talking about the differences between you and Ehart. And the gist of it felt like they sided with you for the most part, but their biggest beef with you was that you – you weren't spending a lot of time talking about what you're for rather than who or what you're against. So how do you respond to that?
Yeah. I mean, well, the bottom line is, first of all, yeah, I am running because she's causing harm in our community. What I am for is harm reduction in our community.
Sure.
So, okay. Sorry.
Sure.
I mean, if we're being honest, I wouldn't be running for office if she weren't causing so much harm in our community.
Okay. All right. That's a fair enough answer.
If we're being super almonds, but no, I mean, but we've talked about this in the past. Like I've talked about this in the past, things that I am definitely for. And I've talked about this. I want to go back to, so in 2016, the laws that the legislature passed are the reason why most of the property tax burden has been shifted to residential homeowners. Mm-hmm. I would like to shift that back. That's what I want to do. I would also, so I would like to support bipartisan legislation that never saw the light of day last year between Senator Dave Lentz, who's here in 33, and Senator Grant Burgoyne, who's a Democrat. So they proposed some legislation to help with like the circuit breaker and kind of shift the property tax burden back into equitability because right now it's outside. So and I've talked about that. That's what I want to push for. I also want to push for the way we fund education. We need to revisit the way we fund education. Also things I've talked about, but nobody seems to care because it's more fun to yell at me for yelling at Barb. So whatever.
Okay.
But no, I've talked about, we need to rethink about how we're funding education, basing it on sales tax and property, like basing our education funding on sales tax is a bit foolhardy, especially as we're heading into a recession. And it doesn't fulfill the constitutional mandate. Our Idaho Constitution asks for an equitable education. All you have to do is look at the difference between the education that you're getting in School District 91 and the buildings and such that you're getting in School District 93, just right here in Bonneville County, that we're not fulfilling that constitutional mandate here in Idaho.
We are not.
And so we need to look at the way we do education funding. And I understand the education funding formula is a super nightmare. My mother has dug into it. She's a teacher out in Hamer. She's dug into it a ton. She's somebody that I would definitely be looking to figure out how we can work on this. But we do need to change the way we fund education. We need to make it a priority. We definitely need to be thinking about things like, one of the things that I've actually been very vocal about is recapturing the internet sales tax revenue. I'm not sure if you know this because it was news to me when I found out not too long ago, but internet sales tax doesn't go into the fund that the rest of the regular sales tax goes into. It goes into a special fund. It's out here. Yeah. Yeah. It has its own special fund. Well, with the COVID, guess which special fund is burgeoning with money now?
Sure. Absolutely.
Internet sales tax fund.
What?
But what is that money being used for? I mean, it's got a name like tax relief fund or tax whatever fund, but you know what it's for, right? The last time they enacted a tax, you look at the analysis from the Idaho, the Center for Fiscal Policy, you look at the tax analysis that they did, and the last time that the Idaho State Legislature passed some tax stuff, it actually went mostly to the top earners. Hey, doing this stuff actually hurts me. Talking about this stuff hurts my bottom line personally, because I actually benefited from that stuff. But the reality of the situation is I also benefit from living in a community that's safe and educated. And so I'm willing to take that hit to my pocketbook. Anyway, whatever. But that's one of the things I've been talking about. We need to be looking at what is going on with that online sales tax fund. Why is it being sequestered? And why aren't we using it for investing in our communities?
Yeah.
That's what I would like to know. Those are the questions that I have. And then on top of that, we also need to look at our tax brackets. We have very narrow tax brackets here in Idaho. Without like raising the top tax bracket or whatever, we could broaden the tax brackets. Because right now, I want to say somewhere around $32,000, $33,000 a year is where you hit the top tax bracket in Idaho.
Oh, really? Is that married or single?
I want to say married. I'd have to check. I would have to double check, but I might be married. I'm going to
check. Either way, that's not a lot of money.
Either way, it's not very narrow tax brackets. They're very narrow tax brackets. And so we should really be broadening the tax brackets. So without even raising taxes on the top earners, because we know that's sacred here, but without even raising taxes on top earners, we could provide some degree of tax relief for others, because if you broaden those tax brackets out and make them more in line with federal, the federal tax bracket designations, then you get a little bit more relief for people who are lower and middle income just by broadening those tax brackets.
Well, and that makes sense. And I'm not exactly sure what's and maybe what you're talking about is what's happened the past few years. But, I have, we've got dual incomes in this house and we make a fairly decent amount of money because of that. And the federal government has given me a refund, even though, I've got a family of four. Well, basically now, I guess two kids are considered kids, but I still get a refund from the federal government. I have not gotten a refund from the state of Idaho in years. In fact, I turn around and I take that refund and I have to pay that to the state plus more every year. And I'm like, why is that the case? So this year I had, not only did I just say, okay, I'm claiming zero on my state taxes. I ended up taking an extra $25 a paycheck just to make sure I don't get caught with some crazy tax bill that the state of Idaho is going to give me at the end of the year. Is this kind of what you're talking about that's happening
here?
Yeah, so this is
kind of what I'm talking about a little bit. So like when you get to the point where your top tax bracket, right, where you're in the top tax bracket of, gosh, I think it's 6.9% in Idaho. Mm-hmm. I'd have to double check that. Mm-hmm. Whatever.
Sure.
Anyway, but when you're in that top tax bracket and you hit that top tax bracket at $32,000, $33,000 a year, mm-hmm. Right?
Wow. Huh.
Like, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
So if you broaden the tax brackets and you said, okay, well, you know, you've got that 0% tax bracket and you broaden it back out the same way that you would broaden it out to, like, I don't know, they just released the 2021 tax brackets and I haven't had time to dig into those yet. But the IRS just released its 2021 tax brackets, like literally okay. today.
Sure.
So I haven't had time to dig in because I'm running for office.
Right.
But basically, if we kind of measured it out like that, where you don't hit that top tax bracket mm-hmm. until much later, you know, it's then yes, you would see a degree of reduction in your own taxes because you wouldn't be in the top. I bet you're in Idaho's top tax bracket right now, buddy. You just are.
Yeah.
Like you just are.
I spent so long being poor. It's weird to be there, but
you know. So yeah.
Yeah.
But that's the thing is you are in Idaho's top tax bracket.
Wow.
And that's, you know, ridiculous. So we do need to look at broadening those out. I know that they're like going to be like, oh, revenue. It's like, yes, I understand that it's going to impact revenue, but there are ways you can offset that. Well, first of all, we've got a $520 million surplus this year. So I'm not sure why we're maintaining cuts to the education, particularly with the teacher's career ladder. Not sure why we're maintaining that. You know, once again, we've got that shady online sales tax fund sitting back there, like, what's going on with that? What could we be using that money for? The other thing that I want to be looking at is sales tax exemptions. So there's an estimated $2 billion a year in sales tax exemptions. Hmm. That's billion with a B. Idaho state budget is $3 billion, give or take.
Sure.
Right?
Wow.
But we're giving away 2/3 of a state budget in sales tax exemptions.
So who's getting those sales tax exemptions?
I don't know. There's hundreds of them.
Fair enough.
That's the problem. That's why I'm saying one of the things I want to look at.
I've never gotten an exemption on my sales tax. I'm just saying.
Who's getting these sales tax exemptions? Why are they getting these sales tax exemptions? And does it make sense to keep giving them? Because, for instance, like, you can buy a fancy tricked out truck, call it a farm vehicle, and get a sales tax exemption on it.
That's true. Yeah.
But if you're buying it as a regular consumer, then you don't. And do you know, whatever. So it's just, there's just things like that where it's like, we need to take a step back and say, okay, who is benefiting from all of this? And why aren't we investing more in our communities? Okay. Like, that's where I'm at. Yeah. I'm like, we want to be investing in our communities. We have the resources. People, like, they like to throw out this, like, well, if we pay for education, we can't pay for roads.
Right.
It's like, that's BS.
Yeah.
That's BS. We've got a $520 million surplus. We got $2 billion in sales tax exemptions each mm-hmm. year. I mean, good grief. We just get rid of half of those.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, come on.
Yeah.
You know, come on.
Wow.
And so to sit here and pretend and say, like, and act like, oh, well, it's all scarce. And, you know, this whole thing. I mean, we have this thing where we talk about, right, the scarcity mindset and the abundance mindset. Well, they're not even bothering with these types of different mindsets. They're just trying to tell you that there's not enough money, even though there is. Mm. It's ridiculous. Mm. And so I would just like to see who's benefiting from all of this. And I would like to see us invest that money in our communities.
A little bit more transparency would be a good thing, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, I got a few more questions for you. Okay,
let's keep it going.
Let's do it. Hey, no, you're doing great. I thank you for being willing to do this. I truly appreciate it. So this is okay. My observation of what's happening, and you may not want to answer this question. And that's completely fine. You can tell me.
Okay.
But my observation is that's happening in the Republican Party is that it's being taken over by extreme factions of that Republican Party within this state, specifically certain organizations that
Idaho Freedom Foundation.
I'll name. Sure. Idaho Freedom Foundation.
Just say it.
Idaho Second Amendment Alliance.
Absolutely. I'm already blocked for freedom. I'm already blocked for freedom on the Twitter.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Mr. Hoffman spends a lot of money doing what he does to push his agenda. And because of that, so do you really, do you feel, am I wrong in interpreting it that way? Or do you see the Republican Party being taken over by extreme right wing versions of what it is?
Right. Now, I mean, obviously, I'm not a Republican. I can't speak to that. I can speak to the fact that I do have Republican members as core people on my campaign team. Mm-hmm. And I can speak to the fact that I have received money from Republicans. And I can speak to the fact that that the people I've talked to in this community are concerned with the influence that special interest groups like the Freedom Foundation, like the Madison Liberty Institute up in Rexburg, have over our politics, because a lot of them feel like this is not our party. This is a minority in our party. They are misrepresenting us and our values.
Yeah.
So that's something that I've heard personally. Now, like I said, I'm not a Republican. I can't sit here and say that's happening for sure. I can only say what people working on my campaign are saying, and I can only say what my Republican friends are saying. Because, I mean, I grew up here. Let's be honest. A lot of the people I grew up with are Republicans. And let's be real, most of my family are Republicans.
It is a state of Idaho. That's what it is, right?
I think I've almost convinced my dad to vote for me.
Okay.
We're almost there.
You got 7 days.
They put a sign in their yard.
Oh, they did? Well, that's a step in the right direction.
Hashtag winning right there. Woohoo!
Yeah. Hey, you got 7 days. Maybe you can get them in the next 7 days.
We can do it. We could do this. Make this happen.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, let's see. Here's the question. I watched the debate that you had at the luncheon, the Idaho Falls luncheon. Watched that online when it was live. Carol Honus asked both you and Representative E. Hart your thoughts on the legalization of marijuana.
You're the one who's bringing this up. I thought I was going to get nailed by the other side, but here you are. Thanks so much, dude.
I want to know. Expand on what you mean. I mean, look, it was such a quick.
Instead, they came after me for my potty mouth. I was waiting for them to nail me on my soft legalization stance. But here we are.
I'm going to have a. Look, I got a couple. One more question too.
I'll answer. I'm good to answer. No, here's the.
Go ahead.
It's like I said. I kept it really short.
Well, you just said yes. That's all you were able to say.
But my reasoning here is twofold. Yeah. So first of all, from the standpoint of practicality, every single state around us has some measure of legalization, whether it's medical, whatever. They have some level of legalization, every single state around us. Mm-hmm. And that even includes our neighbors to the north up in Alberta. And so from a practical standpoint, the idea of trying to prosecute people and use our community resources for something like this just seems unpractical. It seems impractical to me. So just from a purely practical standpoint. And then the other side of it, too, goes back to that whole medical marijuana piece. Mm-hmm. Now, I have a friend. He's told me that if I have to, I can use him as a political prop. So here we go.
Okay.
But no, I have a friend, Casey. He is a Marine vet, and he has chronic pain and he has injuries. Mm-hmm. And when he lived in Montana, he's from here, but he lived in Montana for some time. When he lived in Montana, he had access to medical marijuana, and it helped him with his injuries. It helped him with his pain. It helped him manage that in a way that was much healthier.
Okay.
Now he is back here in Idaho, and he is addicted to legal opioids. He is addicted to painkillers. He has to be prescribed them all the time, and he is addicted to them. Mm. And it has impacted his quality of life and the quality of his relationships.
Sure.
So at the very least, we should be looking at medical marijuana, and we should certainly be looking at it for people like Casey, who's a veteran.
Right.
Like, for reals, you guys. Like, we're always talking about support the troops, but here in Bonneville County, we have a high percentage of our homeless population are veterans.
Mm-hmm.
And we have an affordable housing issue that disproportionately impacts veterans.
Right.
We've got veterans who have PTSD, who have injuries, who have all of these issues, and medical marijuana could help them.
Right.
So my thinking on that is just, it's very practical. And from a situation where you're just sitting here going, you know, let's be real about this here. People are talking about gateway drug this and gateway drug that. No. Do you know what the number one gateway drug is, my friends? It's alcohol.
Right. Yeah.
Like, yeah. When you're talking, like when you're, when you look at the data and you look at the people that escalate their substance abuse, it's not marijuana that's the gateway drug.
Yeah.
It's alcohol that's the gateway drug. So don't, so don't sit here and pretend like marijuana is going to like magically bring all sorts of ills. Is it a panacea? No, it's not.
Yeah.
But when we're sitting here in a state where even Utah has medical marijuana, when we're sitting here surrounded by states that have some form of legalization, it is not practical from a financial standpoint, from a law enforcement standpoint, and from a medical standpoint to be against this. And then let's not even get started on the agricultural people who are like, please, can we do it? Can we do hemp at least?
Yeah,
that's
can we just
cash
do that?
Crop,
yeah.
You guys.
Right.
That's
right.
A cash crop. That's that's good for our economy.
Yeah.
You know, and when you regulate these things, rather than having to spend resources to throw people in jail or prosecute them, when you regulate these things, then you get some revenue from that.
Yeah.
You know, and there has to be some balance, and you do have to realize, yes, are there risks when you do something like this? Sure. But we have an opioid problem here.
Yeah.
And to be honest, medical marijuana could help with that.
Right. Yeah. And like you said, and the obvious thing is being less addictive than opioids are, and less dangerous than opioids are overall. A couple of thoughts on that for myself. Never in a million years would I have ever thought that Utah would pass some sort of legalization of marijuana before the state of Idaho did. And two, it's interesting to me. And look, I'm not a Democrat and I'm not a Republican.
Right.
I just stay right in the middle as much as I can.
Most people aren't.
But, you know, it's funny because a lot of the Republicans tend to lean very, especially in this state, tend to lean very libertarian in their views, except for this one issue, which I just can't figure out.
Right.
It's amazing
to
me.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Let's see. What else do I have in here? I wanted to talk to you a little bit. Representative Ehart listed today on her Facebook page. She posted this little infographic, I guess you could say.
Oh, fun. I haven't seen it yet.
You haven't seen it? Oh,
I haven't seen it yet.
I'm fairly certain the Republican Party put it out. You know, it's got – let me see if I can show that to you there.
Does it involve kind of, me?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's you.
Oh,
it's
fun.
It's compare and contrast between you and her.
That's fun.
So I'm going to go down this list. Let me read it all first, and then I'll let you respond to some of them if you can, okay?
This will be fun. Let's do this. I'm bummed I haven't seen this.
Well, I'll tell you, it's interesting to me, too. Just at the very top, she has a nice professional picture. I'm sorry. She has a nice professional picture of herself. And then it looks like she just grabbed a screenshot of one of your podcasts and put it up there
for
your side. Yeah.
Did she find an unattractive shot?
Well, I don't want to say it. Look, it's one that perhaps some people might find like, oh, you know, it's got an open neck on it and open shoulders.
Oh, she's doing the slutty slut angle.
I think that's probably
fun.
What it was.
I like it.
So,
I like it.
Anyway, I saw this and I laughed just because of the way it's worded. It is so it's funny. So, where we stand.
Okay.
Supports girls and women in sports. Barbara, yes, you know. That's literally how it's worded. Supports girls and women in sports,
right.
Which
well,
of course
see,
is the H the H5
HB HB 500. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm apparently not wanting my nieces to have to strip down in a locker room to prove that they're girls is anti-feminist. So I mean, I don't know, like whatever.
Right.
I mean, let's be honest. That bill is ridiculous. Have you actually read the text of that bill?
I have not. No.
Yeah, so it doesn't actually put limits on who can challenge or any timeline on how to challenge. Mm-hmm. So basically, anybody could be like, oh, well, I don't like how fast you're swimming and beating my daughter, so I'm going to challenge your gender. Well,
really?
Once your gender's been challenged, you have to prove it. And you can't compete until you've proven it. So you could literally, there are no limits on this in this bill. So you could literally just randomly tell somebody, oh, I'm challenging your gender. You can't compete till you prove it. Well, what are you going to do today in your sporting event?
Wow. So they won't be able to compete after that point until they're able to prove
until they've proven. Hmm. And so and she says, oh, well, it can be a blood test or a hormone test or a physical examination of your internal and external genitalia. And it's like, no, actually, in the bill, it says and. It lists three things and it says and. It doesn't say or. It says and. It's really? A whole list of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It's what it is humiliating. And she can say she can spin it all she wants. But the reality of the situation is this bill opens people up to bullying and it doesn't actually solve a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Next one. She says, it says successfully created bipartisan legislation. For her is yes. For you is no. I'm like, well, you haven't been in the state legislature.
I haven't been in the state legislature.
That makes no sense to me.
I don't know. I think helping with Proposition 2, people's legislation, you know, sure, that's bipartisan. If 65% of this district voted for it, then that means it's bipartisan, you guys.
Right.
But yeah, and I help that. That's citizen legislation because she, as part of the legislature, dropped the ball and wouldn't do what we'd been asking them to do for 6 years.
Right. And then her and her cohort decide to try to make it so nobody can ever do that again.
Which is
just terrible.
Yeah. So, you know, whatever.
All right. Next one is supports abortion. No. For her and yes for you.
Oh, did she ask me about that or is she just making shit up? Oh, sorry, making stuff up.
No, that's fine. You're fine. So, supports abortion. That's all it says. It doesn't say, you know, exactly what your stance is or the nuances that go along with it or anything like that.
So the bottom line for me is, once again, it goes back to policy and data-driven policies, right? So to me, it's like, okay, so the policy should be to reduce abortions, right? Mm-hmm. I would like to see a reduction in abortions.
Sure.
I just would.
Yeah.
Wouldn't we all?
Absolutely.
But here's the thing. They sit here and they talk about it and try to label this and label that. But the reality of the situation is this. If you want to reduce abortions, look at the policies that you put into place that actually do that. Look at the data. And the data says if you want to reduce abortions, you do that with comprehensive sex ed, which Barbara Ehart is against, by the way. She's put up numerous bills.
Oh, yeah.
Numerous bills to restrict sex ed and reproductive education. So anyway, if you want to actually reduce abortions, the data says that you actually have comprehensive reproductive education and access to affordable contraception. So those are things that if you put those into place, then you will see a reduction in abortions. And actually, Colorado has some of the lowest rates of abortion in the entire country. Hmm. And they also have some of the most permissive abortion policies. But the reason why they have one of the lowest abortion rates in the country is not because they've banned abortion.
Right.
It's because they have comprehensive reproductive education and access to affordable contraception.
Yeah.
That's why they have one of the lowest abortion rates in the country.
Yeah.
That's Colorado. Alabama doesn't have the lowest abortion rate in the country.
No.
Mississippi doesn't have the lowest abortion rate in the country. Idaho doesn't have the lowest abortion rate in the country. Colorado has one of them. And that's why. And so for me, it's like sitting here and pretending like you can just – like that's ridiculous because I would like to see fewer abortions.
Sure. And you know what?
And I would want to enact policies that create that because actually, if you look at the data, she's the one that's actually supporting abortion because she's against comprehensive sex ed. So she's actually supporting abortion and I'm against it.
And that's the interesting thing. And I think honestly, if you talk to most pro-choice people. Of course, there's the extremists out there on any side of the issue. But if you talk to most pro-choice people, I think they would say exactly what you just said, that most people would like to see a reduction in abortions as much as you can. But if you want that, then you need to be more pro-life rather than anti-abortion. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
What I'm saying?
And once again, I think it's so ridiculous to pretend like you can encompass everything into one label.
Right.
Because if you're really pro-life, like.
Right. Right. No, I totally understand what you're saying. I totally get it. Yeah. So there's a couple here that I think we've already covered, so I won't deal with those. You can look up the infographic when you have a chance here. Oh, this one's good. This one's really good. Supports George Soros's Special Interest Group Reclaim Idaho. First of all, I think Luke would be pretty interested to know that he is a George Soros puppet.
I'm going to go find that and send it to him. Luke and I are buddies. He's stayed at my house when he's been in East Idaho on reclaimed stuff.
And I think I don't know if you were there. I was there. Let's see. Before the pandemic happened, there was a time.
I would like to know, where is my check?
Right.
I did not get paid. Where is my check?
Yeah, I think Luke would probably want to know the same thing about where his is. So, of course, she doesn't, and you do support Reclaim Idaho.
Yeah, of course I do.
Sure.
Reclaim Idaho is a great nonpartisan grassroots.
Yeah. No, it's not. It's funded by George Soros.
Yeah, right, in our dreams. But yeah, no, it's a great grassroots organization. What's amazing to me and what I find amusing is that when you look at extremists on the right, it's all projection, mm-hmm. right? All of the things they accuse you of are actually the things they're doing.
Sure.
They accuse Reclaim, a grassroots organization, of having all this dark, scary money.
Yeah.
Well, have you looked at the Freedom Foundation? Have you looked?
You can't. Most of it you can't because it's so hidden you can't see it. I have tried to look.
Yeah, exactly. Have you looked at – actually, if you want to have a good time, go ahead and look at her Sunshine reports. Mm-hmm. Go look at her campaign finance reports for this campaign. What you will find is that I have consistent – ongoing support from the primary all the way through now from a range of people. Yes, there are people who have donated the maximum that they can donate under Idaho law.
Okay.
But I have a lot of people. I'm getting carpal tunnel from writing the thank you notes. Because
sure.
I literally ever, like, if I know that you donated to me, even if it's $5, I will send you a thank you note.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go ahead and look at the donations I've gotten compared to the donations she's gotten, she's just gotten a nice big chunk of donations in the last couple of months as they started going, oh no, maybe we should start, you know, smearing this woman a little bit.
Yeah.
We need some money. We can't run an effective smear campaign on this woman without money. So, I mean, so it's amusing to me because, like, people are like, well, why are you attacking Barbara? I'm like, I'm not attacking Barbara Ehart. I'm attacking her voting record.
Yeah.
And I will attack her voting record whether I win this election or
sure.
not. I will continue to attack her voting record because her voting record needs to be attacked.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Pointing out that she's actually voted these things, that's not smearing.
Yeah.
That's accountability.
Yeah.
Now,
facts. It's just facts.
Yes. Yeah. Smearing me is something different. But once again, woman on the internet, this is pretty mild stuff. I've dealt with way worse.
Okay. That's
I've
fair.
Been a woman on the internet for 15 years. I guarantee you they haven't done anything bad to me yet.
All right. That's good to know. I mean, I don't want to know. I mean, I've seen some of the comments you put, like, you know, most of them are like, oh, go back to California where you came from or whatever. And I saw one response you said is like, where do they want me to go? The West Side? That's where I'm from. You know?
Like, go home. And one other guy's like, who's like, where are you from? Tell us. And I'm like, I don't know. I graduated from Skyline High School. It's on my website. And I've mentioned several times, it's not a big secret, you guys.
There are those that would think that the West Side is probably the bad part of town around here. I'm just saying. I grew up by the temple. That was probably the bad part of town. Anyway.
Oh, no. You had a good view.
That's it. That's right. So, okay, two more, and then it will be almost done here. So, next one is always voted to oppose property tax increases while serving on the Idaho Falls City Council. Barbara is yes, and yours is not even a yes or a no. It says confused. You're confused. Because you don't understand that property taxes are controlled by local government entities.
Yeah, so that's another fun thing that they're throwing out there to be to once again smear me and obfuscate things. Oh no, yes. I'm using big words now. Anyway, so no, honestly, like, yeah, so they pull that out because the reality of the situation is the state is responsible for the circuit breaker. And the state legislature is the one that put into practice and law the policy that is right now hurting our seniors. So to pretend like the state has nothing to do with this and didn't put our seniors in this position is disingenuous and dishonest.
Mm.
And I will say that again, it is disingenuous and dishonest because the state can deal with these things because the state did. The state legislature did this to our seniors. and they can undo it. And so to sit here and pretend like, yeah, I am perfectly well aware where property tax is set. I am perfectly well aware of who sets the percentages of property tax. But I'm also well aware that the state legislature has some responsibility here when it comes to the burden on our people on fixed incomes and our seniors. Mm-hmm. And the state legislature has that ability because they did it. They exercised it in 2016. They made this happen. They put us in this position. And so to pretend like the state legislature has nothing to do with affordable housing and what's going on with our seniors right now is just downright dishonest. And it once again shows that they will project and they will smear in an effort to, you know, to try and discredit you when you're actually bringing up valid points.
Right. Well, and you know, my mother lives over in one of the, I guess these days it's called Title IX housing. It used to be senior housing, but now they have to open it up to anybody with issues. But she used to, of course, it used to be run by the Eastern Idaho Community Action Partnership, but they stopped receiving money, funds, and grants from the state. So they basically had to sell the properties and hand over the management to private companies. And so now my mom's complex is run by a private company, and there's a lot of issues she's now having to deal with that she didn't have to deal with before. It's not a good situation, and I want so desperately to get her out of there because, they've lost funding. They can't they can't run the facilities anymore. And like you said, that's a state issue.
Yeah.
So I don't want to keep it too much longer, but the last one she had on there was you try to hide your political affiliation.
Oh, yes. Yes. Because being the chair of the Bonneville County Democrats is such a hidden thing. I literally wrote columns in the newspaper for 3 years as the chair of the Bonneville County Democrats. I am literally on TV at least like. There was a period of time for like a year and a half where I was on TV almost at least once a month talking about the Bonneville County Democrats. Yeah, I'm super hiding that. That's something I'm super – because being the chair of the Bonneville County Democrats is super hiding who I am.
Well.
Once again.
I tell you, I don't know. I read that and I'm just like, they don't have much – to really attack you on, all they did was just try to get trigger words out there for people, abortion, George Soros, things like that. And I'm just like, this is bogus nonsense is what it is.
It's divisive fear-mongering, which is, once again, frustrating. And once again, why I'm running for office against a person who would use divisive fear-mongering rather than looking at somebody's actual record and what they've actually done.
Yeah.
You can look at Barbara Ehart's actual record. You can look at what she's actually done. You can look at her actual votes. I have had people email me and go like, how can you say she's against education? And I'll say, here are the bill numbers, go look it up. And they'll come back to me and said, I had no idea.
Yeah.
And I'll be like, I'm sorry. Yes, this is why I'm running for office. I wish I could say it's because I have a wonderful, beautiful vision for the future. Yeah. But really what it's about is harm reduction. And she's done harm.
And she's not representing the people of her district, at least as far as I can tell.
Right. She's not representing the people of the district. And that's just the way it is. Hmm. And that's why I'm running for office, is because I'm just looking at it and going, she's not whatever.
Fair enough. Well, anyway. Do you have anything else do you want to add, or should we leave it right there?
Just yelling a lot. It's great.
That's fair enough. Let some steam off.
I'm passionate about this. The Post Register doesn't think that I get passionate about things, but I do.
Well, Miranda, I truly appreciate the time that you've spent tonight talking to us about a little bit about your life and then the issues that have gotten you excited about running for office. And we wish you the best of luck on next Tuesday.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for having me.